Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. We welcome Jonathan Rui, Director of Foreign Policy at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America. Jonathan, as you're very well aware, there is a bill in the Senate, a sanctions bill, crushing sanctions on Iran and anyone who does business with Iran. That bill has 82 signatories in support. That is well past what they need to override something called a veto. I can only assume that there are many, many votes on both sides of the aisle in the House of Representatives. That bill is rough. Do we need it now, Jonathan? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you as well. Thank you for having me on. I think, yes, the timing matters at least as much as the substance of any bill, given the ongoing nature of the U.S.-Iran nuclear talks and the fact that they appear now to be coming to some sort of watershed moment for any number of reasons. Passing the bill would send a strong signal not only to the Iranians that they do indeed face increasing pressure the longer they fail to negotiate in good faith. The Iranians, unfortunately, are used to getting the United States to the negotiating table where all pressure suddenly vanishes. So sending the bill would be a good signal there, but also signal that Congress does indeed have a voice and a vote in any bill or any deal that might come out of this. And after their Congress's experience 10 years ago, the JCPOA, it's good practice for United States in general for Congress to have oversight of what might be agreed in these talks.
Malcolm?
So when you look at the situation today, is there a possible threat in Tehran's eyes that they could face a military strike from the United States, Israel, both? We know the United States, Israel, Iran was added to the list of countries that are being sanctioned in terms of being allowed to come to the States. I don't think that factors into their consideration. Sanctions don't seem to factor in. What then is the credible threat to Iran?
The credible threat, and it's always been this way in some form or another, but especially now, is Iran's nightmare, which is the joint prospect of U.S.-Israeli coordinated action. As we say all the time, no daylight between the United States and Israel. That is the one thing that can, at this point, if there's any hope of getting Iran to negotiate urgently and in good faith, it's that prospect. But I don't think that's on the table right now for a whole host of reasons.
I go again to the sanctions. There are mixed opinions about whether sanctions work or not with different countries. What is your general opinion? Are they effective or are they just geopolitical rhetoric?
So I think in one way, they're effective certainly at getting Iran to come to the negotiating table. That was the case in the run-up to the JCPOA. I think it was also the case 4 years ago when Iran agreed to come to the table under President Biden. I think it perhaps helped in the current case in recent months, although I think from what we've heard, Supreme Leader Khamenei was also very worried about the prospect of military action. But if sanctions can get Iran to come to the table, they have yet to be shown to convince Iran to agree to a good deal. For Iran, it gains more benefits than it loses from having the United States enmeshed in negotiations, keeping the United States at the table, because, again, there's no real credible threat of further pressure on the Iranians as long as we're busy trying to hammer out a nuclear deal.
Malcolm. When you see what the negotiations at the IAEA, which has released report after report in the last days showing the Iranians to be in violation, is there any action? And we hear the Europeans, Germany, France, Britain, ready to move in concert with the United States now. Is that a credible threat in any way to the Iranians? They seem to have snubbed them all along.
It would be a credible threat in the context of this larger issue I talked about in terms of no daylight between the United States and Israel on a credible military threat. And while it is certainly vitally important that Iran be censured for its gross violations of its IAEA obligations. I think that's long overdue. I think, unfortunately, if that's the only pressure Iran's going to face, they currently hold more cards than we, the West, do at the moment, because they will threaten to leave the NPT or completely block out the IAEA. And I think I'm glad you raised this point. There's the negotiations going on between the United States and Iran, but that cannot be seen separately from this IAEA picture. There's no prospect of a good deal in any sense of the term if we don't have a baseline for what Iran's nuclear program actually contains. And as the IAEA has rightfully been saying for years now, they've lost what they call continuity of knowledge. So we don't really even know what we're negotiating over with the Iranians until we get that missing piece, that transparency.
Iran is not a standalone, Jonathan. It is supported by Beijing and Tehran and Pyongyang in terms of R&D. Is that discussed by the Trump administration? Do they acknowledge they're only dealing with a piece of the larger threat?
I haven't seen any signs of that. I'm glad you asked that. That's an incredibly important issue here, because, you know, all these countries that you just mentioned, they feed off each other, and that what they learn from interacting with the United States. You know, if I'm the Iranians, I'm looking at how Trump in parallel has, shall we say, failed to follow through on a lot of his warnings to Vladimir Putin about coming to the negotiating table, not escalating against the Ukrainians. And I think, you know, if I'm Iran, I've got two big backstops in Russia and China in terms of strategic cooperation, support in any number of ways that I, the Iranians, didn't have 10 years ago, when Russia and China were actually on board with the United States as permanent Security Council members in pushing through the JCPOA. So if I'm the Iranians, that's to mix metaphors, an ace up my sleeve that I didn't have in this last round of negotiations.
Malcolm?
But when you see the Iran's internal economic conditions are in full collapse, the people, 95%, don't want the regime, do they have the wherewithal to really withstand, or is it completely irrelevant what the people think and what the conditions are for them to withstand increased pressure, maybe military action? Are they able to cope now with the situation of Lebanon, Syria, all of this and Iraq at the same time?
I think that's a million-dollar question that, you know, in some ways is unknowable, even though it's profoundly important. You know, things like regime collapse are always gradual, and until all of a sudden they're not, and they seem to happen very quickly. You know, I think two things can be true at the same time. One, the Iranian regime can think that they'll weather these sanctions, and the risks of doing so outweigh the risks of, you know, other courses of action. That can be true at the same time that I think the regime is objectively the weakest it's ever been, both in terms of its defenses are brittle, its regional project to project power is in tatters in a way it wasn't even a year ago. So I think if I'm the Iranians, for me, that all adds up to doubling down on their nuclear weapons enterprise as the ultimate guardian against the regime being overthrown one way or another.
30 seconds, Jonathan. Are the senators going to pull the trigger, or is this talk?
That's a great question. I think we saw, you know, a few weeks ago a letter from Congress and from both houses warning the Trump administration they it should stick to its own red lines, no enrichment. And if I'm, you know, the members that wrote that letter, I haven't seen anything to make me to improve my outlook in the weeks since. So I hope that translates into action rather than talk here on this bill.
Jonathan Rui, Director of Foreign Policy at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America, Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.